With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Welcome back to Greenwashed. You're here with Jaspreet and Dawn. And we are going to get back into something that's been a favorite hobby horse of mine, the United Nations Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. Take your pick, whatever takes your fancy. And to talk about this, we have a friend, Ileana Johnson, back in the house again. You may remember Ileana was here in February on RCR Greenwashed, and we spoke about her experiences and some pretty rough ones about escaping communism from Romania, coming to US, becoming a naturalized citizen. She's got a degree in economics. She's been a university professor, and though retired now, and she's also a very voracious writer. Her blog is Ileana, that's I-L-E-A-N-A, ileanawrites.blogspot.com. I don't know where she finds the time, but she is the author of multiple books, from UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy, Echoes of Communism, so on and so forth. So without further ado, welcome back, Ileana, and thank you so much for making the time for us again.
Thank you, Jaspreet, for having me again from, 11,000 miles away or further? I'm not sure how far New Zealand is from us.
North Virginia. Now, we are grateful. The pleasure is all ours. And, you know, when we spoke in February, and God, time flies when you're having fun, both Dawn and I remember being absolutely struck dumb with some of your recollections of growing up in Romania, what your family went through, your personal losses. And I'm still, as you can watch now, I'm still puzzled and how you are able to move on from that and have the attitude you have today towards life and towards giving this, you know, Medusa that has all its tentacles, the United Nations agenda, all you've got. How do you do this for decades fighting?
Truly, I didn't start fighting about Agenda 21 until 2009 when we moved to Virginia, and I had more free time, and a personal friend was experiencing the effects of Agenda 21 at her farm, which was not really a farm to produce large quantities of anything or take care of animals. She just had a few animals and was growing a small garden to teach children in the area, high school students, how to grow a garden and how to take care of farm animals. So it was really sort of a teaching kind of farm. And I was just shocked about all the things she was going through. And so I thought, what is this Agenda 21? I had no idea. So I started reading all 42 chapters of it. It was about 300 pages. And then I was horrified and I started paying attention. And in my own county, they had a UN Agenda 21 plan already that I didn't even know about. We were never asked to vote on it. It was all controlled by ICLEI at the time, which was the international organization of all these globalists from Geneva, Switzerland, who were trying to implement sustainable development across the world. And they always did it at the grassroots level, at the local level. So I was really shocked. And so I went from experiencing all these communism in the American academic area environment to Agenda 21, which is really communism on steroids because it's at the global level.
Yes. And you use the word ICLEI. Now, for listeners, I've spoken about this at times, but just to jog your memory, ICLEI initially stood for International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. I think a whole lot of us cottoned onto it.
There were about 600 municipalities across the U.S. that were members because you had to pay to be a member.
So we have
the municipalities were paying to be a member, and all these individuals from overseas, from Geneva, Switzerland, and United Nations were sent to these 600 localities to form their visioning committees as if the local people had the initiative to do this, tell them what they should do.
Yeah, but they found a whole lot of people cottoned on to what ICLE stood for, and now ICLE, they call it Local Governments for Sustainability, so that acronym is still there, but it now spells out something different. But right. Not far from us, Ileana, is a city of Dunedin. Dawn and I both live in the south of New Zealand, the very south of the South Island. And Dunedin, its last mayor, Mr. Aaron Hawkins, he was on the board of ICLE Oceania. And Dunedin is a pretty much a university city. There's a whole lot of initiatives that come out that have a particular, for lack of a better word, communist flavor. Right, Dawn?
Yeah, they did. They divided the world into the five areas. And you guys were Oceania, right?
Yeah, and so they put us. So tell us, what did your friend face? What trouble was she having trying to develop this teaching space for kids?
She bought this farm, and it was, she signed a conservation easement because she didn't know what that meant. She thought, the conservation easement is just, I'm just signing that I'm not going to do anything to the land that's going to destroy its value, because no farmer is going to be dumb enough to do that to the land they own. They're going to take care of it. And as long as I do that, then I'm not going to pay a whole lot of taxes for this land. But what she didn't know was that there was an environmental NGO in Virginia that held this conservation easement. And she didn't read the fine print, which is strange because she is a lawyer. She doesn't practice law, but she did go to law school. But anyway, she started learning that in this contract, she couldn't do anything whatsoever to the land. She couldn't even plant a bush or anything that interfered with a view shed of the property, or she couldn't even let the few animals they had seek refuge shade under these trees, because they said that during the Civil War, it was a historically significant area that soldiers sought refuge in the shade on her farm and had bivouacked in the area. Well, she researched it and it wasn't true. They just passed through. But it was ridiculous. And she couldn't even grow tomatoes. She couldn't have a few chicken with eggs. She couldn't hold parties for 8-year-old little girls on her property. There was a house there. Nobody lived in it, but she was holding parties once in a while, even though she was paying all the taxes and, you know, all the fees to do that. She wasn't allowed to do it. She couldn't even add water to the pond, or she couldn't drain a rain puddle. She couldn't do anything. So we started fighting in Richmond. And eventually, we succeeded in passing a law where farmers could actually farm on their land. So it kind of superseded these contracts that farmers didn't know what they were signing. They were just looking at the bottom dollar. Oh, we don't have to pay so much tax on the land.
Well, Ileana, if it's any consolation in New Zealand, and this is no consolation, by the way, we have a concept called sites and areas of significance to Maori, and they don't have to tell you what's on that land that's so significant that wants to have a say over it, and whether, you know, currently they're not stopping farming on that land, but there's potential for that to happen because people want to destroy the private property right. They create all these ideas and means to do that. And I know you write prolifically about property rights as well, but going back a second, Jaspreet, I'd like to bring this up. Isn't it intriguing how Switzerland is the place that this stuff seems to be emanating from, a supposedly neutral country? And just that today on the radio, I heard that Switzerland, of all countries, is saying, this mass migration is not going to be for Switzerland. We don't want more than the people we've got. We've got 8 million people now. We don't want unfettered immigration happening. Yeah, so on the rest of the world scale, they think that's okay. But all of a sudden, the Swiss, who are very determined people, I have to say, because I know a few of them, they are saying, no, we're putting up the stoppers. We don't want this. So I'm putting that up early in this interview because I'm sensing there is frustration starting to happen by some countries about elements of the Sustainable Development Goals. And that's one of them, isn't it? The migration
global migration compact.
One of the options.
Mm. Yeah, they think that with the IOM, the International Office of Migration, which is, by the way, directing all this migration into the U.S. and everywhere else, they think that humans, you know, are free to go and live wherever they want. Well, we can only sustain so many of them. We already have a few millions. So, but speaking of Switzerland, I went to Switzerland and I remember how pristine the land was. And I went for a walk by myself up this mountain. I think we were in Lucerne. And it was just beautifully green and very pastoral. And there were no people around. Everybody spoke whatever, I think it was German in that particular canton. They do have three different languages, official languages in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, I see the mountain just opens, literally. All the grass just moves. These huge gates, for lack of a better description. And here come these tanks out of the middle of the mountain down the road that I was walking on. And I was terrified, to be frank with you. And then later I found out that every house in Switzerland has an AK-47 and other weapons. In other words, that has a male. So every male in that country is in the army. And yet they claim all this neutrality, and I'm sure they're behind the push to confiscate weapons in our country. So it was kind of an interesting encounter for me.
It is a fabulously clean and desirable country to live in.
It is. Right. And they don't give citizenships that easy. You have to live on the same street continuously for 15 years. Nobody can lodge any complaint against you. And if they do, then your 15-year wait starts all over again. So they don't really want undesirables to become a Swiss citizen. Even though you may marry a Swiss citizen, you don't automatically become one.
So they have their ultimate own sustainable development goal around population.
Isn't it funny? We're discussing this in 2024. You both spoke about migration. I should admit, I am the odd one out here. I haven't been to Switzerland. But if you go to the UN website for sustainable development, that's sustainabledevelopment.un.org, you can still download a copy of Agenda 21. It was 350 odd pages. And the best part about it is it's a PDF. You can just, you know, do a control F search. And if I pop in the word migration, in 1992, Clause 5.9 was talking about we need to manage the interrelated impact of demographic trends because major migration flows may be expected with increasing climatic events and cumulative environmental charge that may destroy people's local livelihoods. So, and they're telling the member states that policies and programs should be developed for handling the various types of migration that will result from or induced environmental disruptions. So this has all been in place for a long time. You know, what sort of crystal balls do these folks have that if this document came out in 92, you know, it would have been in the making for at least, what, 20 years before that? 350-page document. 50 odd years we've known this. And I don't know about your country, Ileana, the States. Out here, regardless of who's in power, every single one of our 120, a bit more now, odd representatives, MPs, deny the existence of this document. Deny.
I know when I mentioned it in a speech in 2009, people looked at me as if I was crazy. And even conservatives on our side said, oh, no, don't mention Agenda 21 because they immediately call you a tinfoil conspiracy theorist. Just say property rights. No, this document actually exists. And at the time when I read it, it had about 300 pages and 42 chapters. Now they've added, I think, 50 more pages or so to it.
It's 351 pages, exactly.
Yeah, there you go. So 51 more pages. Some of the wording sounds very neutral and very good. I mean, who would object to just having clean water and clean land and clean air? And, you know, every time I look up in the sky every week, there's usually a day when I see all sorts of chemicals being sprayed in an attempt to modify or mitigate global warming. But all this Agenda 21 goes back 100 years. It's not really that recent. It has accelerated in 87 when they introduced this concept of sustainable development, which kind of became the linchpin of Agenda 21, sustainable development, and was introduced in 87 by Gro Harlem Brundtland, who was at the time an environmentalist, and then she became prime minister of Norway, part of the Labour Party. She had three terms in the 90s in Norway. And in order to achieve this sustainable development, and again, they presented it as an environmental issue so that future generations would have, and the description was really vague. It said, development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Obviously, a very vague description, because the first questions I would ask is what needs, who decides, for how long, and what ability and what needs of future generations, and who decides this? And who's going to tell you, oh, you can't have this need and you're done with this need? So anyway, it started then. And in the this blueprint for this sustainable development actually became Agenda 21 in 1992 in Rio, when it was signed by 179 different countries, including the UN. And at that version, it was 300 pages. And in order to Americanize this blueprint, President Bill Clinton passed an executive order in 1993 on June 29th, and he established the Council on Sustainable Development. And at that time, he named 12 cabinet secretaries, 6 environmental organizations like Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And there were some executives from Enron, if you remember the corporation.
Yes.
Browning Ferries and S.C. Johnson, and you hear ads about S.C. Johnson's all the time because it's a big corporate concern. And at that point, they started giving grants to all 50 states in the U.S. So they created a huge group of sustainable development NGOs. And such an NGO, which is a non-governmental organization, operated in Northern Virginia, where my friend had her farm. And they offered these conservation easements, they offered money, and they offered ideas how to change things in their communities in order to be in line with their sustainable development. And so they actually put their individuals on the boards of supervisors. I don't know what they're called. I think it's councillors in New Zealand. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we have boards of supervisors. So they put individuals that they handpicked and paid to be elected or nominated to these boards of supervisors. And they receive all this funding from the federal government, along with the NGOs. So we had nothing, we the citizens had nothing to do with all these plans of Agenda 21, and yet they're all around us.
Yep. Yes, in fact, I think in New Zealand, Jaspreet, if you do the search for some of the funding in the bowels of some of the NGOs in New Zealand, you would find similar taxpayer funding feeding them.
They started organizing under terms like Your Town, 2020, or Your Town 2010, whatever year it was implemented, or they would go SD region X, Y, and Z, meaning Sustainable Development Region, and we have regions. And in essence, they become unelected individuals who control our lives, and we don't know where they come from. Some of them come from among us. They're people who live in our area, and they get paid handsomely to basically deceive us about what the sustainable development is. And I would venture to say that in Northern Virginia, where I live, probably only about 10% of the population knows what Agenda 21 is. And yet they're being subjected to its plans.
It is. And just the very wording that came when they put this document on the website, the UN's, it says Agenda 21 is a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations systems, governments, and major groups in every area in which human impact on the environment. What does this even mean, this sort of word salad? But yet they are, it is supposed to be implemented right down to every level.
It is a word salad. Thank you for saying that. If you weed through the reading and you kind of pinpoint on certain words, you'll find out that they want nature preservation, meaning that they don't want humans to live in certain areas that they define as an important area, and they just want animals, and we can't cross, we can't drive, whatever. They have to save our wetlands at any cost, improve the wetlands. They have to restrict development in sensitive areas. And who decides what these sensitive areas are?
Dawn lives close to a significant wetland here. I have no doubt that there's imposition on farmers and just, you know, general everyday folk living around that area, Dawn.
Well, it's not obvious to most of us. It was at the start. It's called a Ramsar registered wetland, so it's internationally gazetted. There's certainly no more development around it, and you certainly can't drain anything nearby anymore. So the land development that's occurred over my lifetime has pretty much stopped. So that's the effect. We could have, there's rules and regulations everywhere. I just want to go back a bit. When I was still involved in farmer politics, I had Agenda 21 in soft copy on my desk. And I asked my senior staffers, what's this document? It seems pretty innocuous.
So you mean hard copy, Don, not soft copy then? You had a physical book?
It was soft covered. Yeah, it was a physical book.
Right.
So, okay. And they said, oh, no, there's nothing to see in here. I said, but it reads pretty interesting. There's some stuff in here that to me is quite nice. But what is it around property rights? That was my big thing. And they just constantly told me, nothing to see here, Don, nothing to see. And of course, that's still the way it is, I think. I think New Zealand organizations, like the one I was involved in, still probably don't see this as a problem because, I was, Eliana, quite involved in trade negotiations, just traveling as a support for New Zealand trade delegations. And we were keen on multilateral trade negotiations and trade deals, free trade deals. And it appears now, the way I look at it 20 years on, I'm sort of thinking, taking a deep breath. I'm not sure that was wise. Was I sucked into a vortex I shouldn't have been in? Because, I'm okay with free trade deals between sovereign nations, but in the big pact, I'm just not so sure. What do you think? Sorry, I know this is a bit of a change of direction, hopefully only for a moment, on trade. What's your thoughts about multilateral trade negotiations? Because I know you have opinions about the TPP.
Well, I'm actually against all these trade deals because usually, in the case of the United States, I should say, it hurts the local population because... We are, and it seems to be a problem in Romania as well. Farmers are encouraged not to farm. They're paid not to farm, but then they have to buy substandard products from other countries because it's dictated so from the United Nations. You have to get involved in these trade deals. And of course, the presidents are also bribed in some way to participate and sign these agreements. And I'm not privy to what those briberies are, but I'm sure they're quite hefty, and I'm sure it benefits certain industries, but it hurts the population in general. It hurts farmers, it hurts regular people who work in factories, blue-collar workers, but you have to get involved in trade because not everybody can make all the products cheaply enough for the population, so it's more beneficial to trade, and I'm all for that.
So it just depends on the tariffs and the like that make your consumers pay more for products. I mean, the other side of that concerns me is the argument I used to hear is that the subsidies that are given to American farmers often just end up
that's certainly not fair.
No,
the subsidies are highly unfair.
Yeah, they end up in Wall Street and basically don't stick with the farmer to do reinvestment, so to speak. Anyway, it's a big subject, this cross-border trade.
Yeah, it's a sore subject, I believe, because of tariffs and also the quantities of certain goods that you can and cannot import or export. And it's a sticking point, I think, internationally with all the countries. It's not just select countries.
And
but
so,
I think certain groups in both countries at times lose.
Yeah, I think that's true. In fact, my recollection of debating this at the time was around the 1930s depression. There was an act in the United States called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. And I think it made the depression worse for Americans when it all was washed up rather than better. But I stand to be corrected on that, Eliana. My history is not as good as yours on that, I'm sure. But we go around in circles on this. I mean, the 17 development goals, I look at them as headlines, and I don't want to go into much of it, to be honest, because the word sustainability just gets me. What does it mean? What does it mean?
Well, I can just name some of the things that irk me. One being that, of course, preservation of scenic views is wonderful. But if you look at the United States, 90% of our West is owned by the federal government. And in some countries, some states, they're big enough to be a country, but they own 50% of the land, and everything is designated scenic this and scenic that. And you cannot have any kind of economic activity on the land. And you can only cross that land with their permission because they have all these huge national parks. And they allow a limited number of people to go to even drive through, much less walk through. So they don't really intend on much a human foot to go through certain areas. And I'm talking about vast areas in the United States. They want development to be clustered and high rise. Well, who wants to live in a high rise? A lot of Chinese people died in those high rises with COVID. They were all locked in. And they want you to have a rural village concept. Well, I lived in a rural village and we couldn't go much anywhere else. I think we had a rickety bus once a week, maybe, to go to the nearest town. So it was terrible. They want to have smart growth. But what is it smart? Who decided that this growth is smart? Because there were some people at the top and they decided that they're the smartest amongst us. And so their smart growth is actually planned developments. It's almost like a ghetto, the 15-minute cities, where you can't get out in and out without incurring a penalty after so many exits and entries. Then they want walkability, 5 minutes from work and play and school. Well, America is so large and we have so much suburbia, we can't walk to work 5 minutes.
And
we're
it comes
quite
to be
far
seen.
From work. And nobody's crazy enough to ride a bike on I-95 north and south when it's dangerous for cars, much less for bicyclists that nobody sees. They want increased population density. We already have a 40% increase in population in our county. And according to the Census Bureau, they're all illegals. And I don't count in that how many have come since Biden opened the border. They want to limit mobile homes. They want to have zoning that encourage infill, and they want more codes to be enforced, more regulations. You can do this, you can't do that. Then they want more conservation easements, these contracts with farmers, so they can't have any agriculture whatsoever on their land. We call them in Northern Virginia penny loaf farmers because they have beautiful land with grass and a few horses that they use, you know, to ride. You know, you have to pay a fee to ride the horse. And that's the extent of their agriculture or animal husbandry, I guess. You have to have sidewalk, bike paths, and walking paths. And around here, if you ride a bike, you're going to be killed. That's just the way it is. They want to have multi-use trails and corridors that are landscaped, and you can't step off the trail into the environment because you damage or step on plants or whatever.
Gosh, and I'm listening to you, and I can pretty much echo every single sentiment here to what you're saying, Ileana. Every single thing you're saying, we are seeing it here in New Zealand, you know, just coming at us. But I wonder if at this point we may take a break and come back in a couple of minutes. Would that be all right?
Sure.
Listeners, you're with Greenwash, and we have Dr. Ileana Johnson back in the house, her second time here in 2 months. We've been talking about Agenda 2030, and we'll be back in a moment. You can text us at 2057 or email at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Welcome back to Greenwash. You're with Jaspreet and Dawn, and we still have Dr. Ileana Johnson with us from Northern Virginia. And before the break, we were talking about free trade agreements and how the sustainable development goals and all of these seem to interweave. And I've been looking up, Dawn, the New Zealand-Europe free trade agreement that was signed last year that is supposed to open up a complete bonanza for us. And if I go through, and that document is 4,012 pages. But the first thing that they say in the document is that both parties, they will effectively implement the Paris Agreement, which is, you know, reducing emissions under paragraph 2, which includes obligation to refrain from any action that defeats the purpose of the Paris Agreement. So the trade will only happen when certain goals deemed by the United Nations as saving the world will happen. So we've got our own international negotiators tying us up in knots, so much for free trade and, you know, free will and free agents. None of this happens anymore.
It's not really free when they attach all these requirements about sustainable development and the Paris Accord. It's not free because Paris Accord, if you follow all their directives, it's going to kill many industries and the economy of many countries.
Mm-hmm. And another thing you spoke about, Ileana, was that how farmers are not being allowed to farm effectively. We began with your friend's example, which got you interested. Now, we have in New Zealand a Department of Conservation. It's a government agency, and its job is, as the name says, conserve the nature, the environment around us. Now, last year, there were a couple of headlines. In one, there was a proposed scheme, an irrigation company, instead of what the market rate should have been for an easement over land that the Department of Conservation controlled, what you were referring to as covenants, we call it an easement here. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be around $4,800 a year, market value. They proposed $45,000, 1,000% higher than the market value, and that scheme did not go ahead. Another group shareholders of a small irrigation scheme not very far from us in Otago. Overnight, they saw a 6,000% hike demand from the Department of Conservation for the fees they would pay for an easement. An easement, I might add, was just over 900 square meters of land, of scrubby land, nothing we are talking of, you know, rural, out in the sticks, that sort of land. And their annual rate went from $550 for this easement to $32,684. That's a 6,000% hike. And this is what we were talking about, isn't it? That sustainable development, stemming, farming, or just any free enterprise, private enterprise.
It's just going to destroy private enterprise entirely. And all you wind up with is these big farming corporations who will be spraying stuff on crops with whatever robots they can put in the air and mechanized anything. And it's going to put everybody out of business, period.
Yeah. But
we spend in this country, in this economy, $1 trillion every 90 days. $1 trillion every 90 days. Can you imagine if we were, Don was mentioning the Rockefellers. If you were to confiscate all the wealth of every billionaire, millionaire in this country, and of all the people who have any kind of accumulated wealth in the bank, homes, whatever, guess how long that's going to last at the current mode of spending around the world, collectively speaking. It's going to last about 30 days. And what are you going to do after that?
It's so easy to spend other people's money. But it is, it is not just
who
rural.
Who is going to make wealth again and money after 30 days? If you're going to put everybody out of business by confiscating everything with all these codes and regulations and laws and rules, and it's just absolutely insane. Yes. And I have an example that I, a couple of examples. All of this started with Rachel Carson, this lady who wrote, she was a college professor. She wrote a book called Silent Spring in the 70s. And this book, she apparently thought that she couldn't hear a certain bird sing anymore in her area. And I don't know, maybe the birds migrated, or I don't know, maybe they just, who knows, they were not in the area. She convinced entire generations across the globe that our human activity is killing the planet. And ever since then, things have exploded. And at first it was just a gradual movement, but now in the 21st century, in the last 24 years, it has exploded. And people are absolutely insane about the idea that we humans are killing the planet, which is ludicrous because humans have been on the planet for a long time, and animals, plants, and everything else have existed before humans ever did anything on this planet.
But this is not just for rural parts of the world, is it? They also, there's, as you were talking about, the walking initiatives, the cycling initiatives, all of this. And again, this comes straight from the Agenda 21 book, the 351 pager I have open in front of me. There's a clause, 7.21, which says, cities of all countries, that they're talking to the globe, should reinforce cooperation amongst themselves and cities of the developed countries under the aegis of Non-Governmental Organizations active. So they're saying get active under NGOs such as the International Union of Local Authorities, the IULA, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ICLEI, and the World Federation of Twin Cities. Now, in New Zealand, we have a whole lot of IT work going on behind the scenes talking about twin cities. And they say this is for disaster management. This is about having a replica of a city so you can pinpoint, you know, where the water, where the drainage, where the power outage and all of this. We also have other twin city concepts. So we have certain cities in New Zealand that have a sister city in, say, Japan or China. We love it somehow. And these initiatives, but again, 32 years ago, then they're saying get active under non-governmental organizations such as ICLEI. ICLEI Oceania, the website today mentions that we have two active councils, We have the Christchurch City Council and the Dunedin City Council, which are members. We don't have a New Zealander board member after the Dunedin mayor left. He's no longer on the Eclay board, but we have these cities there going on about this. And Eclay is all about environmental justice, social justice, and the science be damned completely. I see that all around me. I see that as a farmer. I see that in my, you know, personal life. I see that in my kids' studies. I also see it in my professional life.
Well, this here's another example of social justice. I told you at the beginning that I went to the National Building Museum in D.C. I was in a phase of I wanted to see every museum in Washington, D.C. because they're free. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, my tax dollars are paying for them, so let's go. So when I went to this museum, which had a bookstore that had everything in it, every book was dedicated to smart growth, green building, sustainability, everything sustainable, green world propaganda. And but most interestingly, I found out why we have such a congestion, like Washington, D.C. is, and the suburbs is the most congested area in the country. And I found out that this activist and community organizer named Sammy Abdullah Abbott, he was born in 1908, died in 1990. So that's what, 34 years ago? He had built a multiracial grassroots organization called the Emergency Committee on the Transportation Crisis to halt the building of freeways in the District of Columbia. Okay. The headline, and this was back in 1969, was, quote, "Freeway Cancer Hits DC," end of quote. So his organization coordinated similar activism across the country, but he particularly focused on the congestion cancer. This was in 1969 in Northern Virginia, from insufficient roads. And it's actually more descriptive of what's today. It's just a nightmare to go anywhere. Anyway, his organization fought the destruction in 1969 of Black neighborhoods in the path of new roadways. And the racist propaganda at the time screamed that the North Central Freeway was, quote, "a white man's road through a Black man's home," end of quote. So because of that, they never finished the Beltway. So if you live in Northern Virginia, you only have two roads to go in any direction. You have Highway 1 and Interstate 95, and that's it. You can't take side roads to go to anywhere else. So not only do you have local traffic, but you have traffic passing through from north to south and vice versa. So it's an absolute nightmare. So here's a guy with his social justice in 1969 prevented development in the name that it was racism.
Well.
And it's the same now with all this environmental movement. Everything that you don't do is racial injustice. So everything is about racial and environmental justice. And for some reason, apparently we don't breathe the same air. They think that Black people are more affected by
we have the same thing here, you know,
breathing
different demographies.
The air than white people or brown people or Asian people. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. People have no common sense anymore. They believe all this stuff.
They do believe. I was listening to your speech, Ileana. This was in 2015. So 9 years ago, you spoke in Ontario, California, at the 33rd annual meeting of Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. I don't know how you got there, but man, that speech, it was an hour's worth. And I remember you saying that each time they, as in, you know, these big overlords, UN and your NGOs, they talk about social justice and diversity. You say all I hear is oppression and control. Boy, are we controlled now. When you have just one highway going, it's easy to control. When you're in a flat, you know, with one entry, a sort of big apartment building, one door at the bottom, that's it, you're done. You're not allowed to extend an irrigation scheme. You're not allowed to go into the wilderness, your own national parks. There's a limit. We are talking out here in Fiordland, which is, you know, it's a beautiful place, but there's a huge song and dance being made about it. I don't quite know how to express myself. I have seen equally stunning places in Kashmir, but we have made a huge song and dance about Fiordland, and now we are saying that people will no longer be allowed to go in it on private vehicles. Everything will have to be managed. There'll be low emission. There'll be only buses going. You'll have to get tickets and everything. And I've done that, you know, hopped in a car with my husband and kids and just driven in, gone to this beautiful place, Mirror Lakes and other places, had a picnic and come back. And that sort of thing for the next generation won't be happening. But when I see, I'm a migrant here, I see other fellow Indians who've come across in a bit later, they've just accepted the status quo of various New Zealand cities as what it is, because that's all they've known. They've never known it any different. They probably don't haunt bookstores like me trying to find books on history, and Don knows the sort of stuff I read to get a sense of what were things like in the past. But that's where migrants, I think, are really handy. I know we're not allowed to call them illegals anymore. Ileana, if someone comes here, like the ones you have in the US, undocumented migrants, I believe, is the term Biden likes. But they are so handy, aren't they, in pushing Agenda 21?
Well, I still have my card that said that I was a resident alien for many years before I became an American citizen. And I wasn't offended because I was a resident and I was an alien. I was from another land. I was from another continent. It never offended me. So I don't understand why these people would be offended. I don't think they really are. I think it's just the leftist government is coming up with euphemisms that are more and more in line with their propaganda narrative. And because they want these people to vote for them in perpetuity. If you ask them when they cross the border, who are you going to vote for in Spanish or whatever language they speak? Oh, Biden, of course. Yeah. Why? Because this man is
allowing us away,
being invaded, and giving them money to live here and the same rights as we have.
And for a long time, I thought environmentalism, I still do, to a big, the large extent, it is the linchpin of the Agenda 2030. But now I think migration plays an equally important role. Environmentalism and mass migration, because I've changed my views in the last couple of years. I'm allowed to, isn't it? A lady can change her views. I have changed mine.
Well,
and then the other problem with Agenda 21 is the use of windmills, wind turbines, and solar panels, which are not really environmentally friendly at all or human friendly, like they claim. Solar panels fry a lot of birds in midair because the birds see the heat flux and they think it's water, and they just basically disappear in scorch in midair. And then the wind turbines chop up millions and billions of birds annually, including those that are protected. And they cause this thump, 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 thump sound when they run at a certain speed, which is usually 32 miles per hour and higher. And that causes a lot of health issues for humans and for animals.
But we see hypocrisy here, Dawn. Last week, when the sailing cancelled, SailGP, a prominent event here, was cancelled to save some dolphins. But otherwise, I don't think they'll use the same excuse, Ron, will they, for offshore wind turbines or something?
Probably not. I don't think so. There'll be no harmonics. There'll be nothing that'll affect the dolphins. They'll be just fine.
Yeah. So dolphins can stop a boat race, a big one that would have brought money into a local economy in Christchurch, not far from us here. But I don't know.
Dolphins are pretty smart. They're not going to get in the way of a fast-moving foiling yacht, I wouldn't have thought. They would have seen it as a bit of sport and fun. But anyway, look, who am I to say what a dolphin will do and what it won't? But we're certainly putting a lot of restrictions on ourselves at Ian. And I want to quickly go back to that trade deal, because there's something in it that I just wanted to be sure I was going to be on message about sustainable development goals. And one of the platforms in this key New Zealand European Union free trade deal is this. The Trade and Sustainable Development chapter includes, for the first time in an FTA for New Zealand and the EU, enforceable commitments on trade and gender equality to advance women's engagement in trade. There's a world first happening on May the 1st. This is coming into play. This is a world first. Where gender equality and to advance women's engagement in trade. You know, what's been the problem? That's one of the sustainable development chapters. Another one was, of course, around conservation and combating illegal wildlife trade. And of course, Jaspreet talked about the Paris Agreement. So this whole regime has to be stopped. And I've got another an acronym for SDG, and it is to stop devious governance. And I just think that's the problem. We've got devious governance happening all around the West, slowly eating us up, feeding the top end of town, the limousine class. We mentioned the Rockefellers before. The absolute contradiction in this for me is that the supposed disadvantaged classes complain that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. But they encourage this sort of governance. The SDGs all sound so nice. So the top end of town does get richer, and the middle class is one suffering, I would think. So massive contradiction around these SDGs. And, you know, I never, as I said earlier, never thought anything of them until you actually are forced, you know, effectively by meeting people, talking about it, to understand how wide-ranging and deep-seated they are and who's getting fat out of it. And actually, when you look at the international consultancy firms, especially in accounting and legal sense, they are just going to make a poultice of cash out of this, and no one wants to talk about that. Writing reports.
It's a climate change industry, really.
It is. Yeah, and one thing that is good, I suppose we should have a positive note. I look at the net zero concepts around the world. I read a lot about it, and they do seem to be failing, which is about time, I'd say. Net zero is exactly where we'll be. In fact, we're already in net deficit by all the regimes they put in place. So I dare say a question to ask is, how can we, you know, you're doing a fantastic job, Eliana, educating people. Just by talking about this, I hope we grab a few more people to come over and at least try to understand. What is it that's going to take the big push to, what's going to make the big difference? Is it when countries get to a point of destitution? Yeah, you can't keep printing money forever and expect someone to pay for it.
It's all going to go south when a lot of countries will become destitute, and we are going to print so much money in the West, people to whom we owe all this debt are going to start calling in the debt. Mm-hmm. And that's when the proverbial something will hit the fan, excuse my expression. Yeah. But I think at the point of destitution, yes, things are going to change. But until then, nothing is going to change because these people are so ensconced in all of the countries of the world. Well, not so much in Africa, but pretty much everywhere else they are. But particularly in New Zealand, Australia, in Europe, and in North America. The others, they have some elements of Agenda 21, but not a whole lot. I have seen the effect of smart meters, which is also part of Agenda 21, which forces people to watch their electricity consumption. And of course, by installing these smart meters, they make their electricity per kilowatt hour skyrocket. And whenever it's convenient to them, they can turn off your power and there's nothing you can do about it. So we have fought them very hard in Virginia not to install smart meters and to make it optional, and we succeeded. So some people don't have smart meters. We have to pay a little extra to have the meter read, but yeah. We don't have the smart meters read from the mothership.
Yeah, well, look, Ileana, I can say that I was part of a regime that did put smart meters around the community. Part of it was based on the old meters were not recording well when they were put under an audit, and there was a lot of free electricity going into some places. Now I'd like to know that the smart meters are being audited for their effectiveness too, and they're not overcharging or undercharging. The other thing
we
did,
I don't know about New Zealand, but over here they are overcharging. The smart meters are expensive. Right. They don't last very long in inclement weather. They have to be replaced often. Oh. We've had some traditional meters in the U.S. that have been as old as 75 years old, and they're still registering correctly.
Yes.
So,
yeah, so look, and the other argument, I am trying to defend that it wasn't all bad that smart meters came into play was around time of use monitoring. So there was big peaks and there's a morning. It's like a duck, a back of a duck. You get a peak in the morning and a peak in the night, and you try to limit the peaks because we've got a finite resource of electrons, and it was about balancing that out. The problem is now we've got that off-peak power will go west if we start synthesizing or electrolyzing hydrogen and use all those spare electrons. So in the end, it could have been a known goal. I stand to fall on my, on my sword if I have to on that sort of stuff. But at the time, it seemed like a fair angle to use to get the most efficient use of the electrons. But there's a point where socialization of all this stuff, a bit like your road and your tolling of roads. Effectively, there is a point where socialization is important, or else you then try to get every vestige of efficiency out of something that will, in the end, create other angles that aren't that good for the consumer or the taxpayer. And I think that could be one. I mean, I'm a big supporter of toll roads. To fund them while they need developed and for their first sort of 10 years of life. But when they're paid off, just call it quits.
Well, we have toll roads here, and I can tell you sometimes it's $50 to go 8 miles.
Yeah, horrible. Horrible.
Because they privatized them. They were built with taxpayer dollars, and then the politicians gave them away to some corporation that made a few improvements and a few extra exits and entries. And now they're charging an arm and a leg, $50 to go 8 miles to Washington, D.C.
It's not right. It's not right. And that's what I'm saying. Once the infrastructure is paid for, your local property taxes or your petrol taxes or whatever you do should fund it forever from then on. It's not a problem. I'm staggered to hear the size of the tolls in your area. And I know my brother sort of talks about them in San Francisco Bay area. And
you stopped driving
and it
or took
nothing
the door?
To improve the congestion. It actually made congestion worse because before we had HOVs, high occupancy vehicles, where you went certain hours of the day where you could go with three people in the car and it was free. And then the rest of the time, everybody could go free and it alleviated the congestion on 95. But now who can afford $50 to go 8 miles?
No, who can? You look at what's happening in Oxford around and the number of, you have a pass for a certain number of years is all you can travel. After that, you start paying charges. We can see that. It's all about control.
They never asked the population. It was just the board of supervisors who made the decision. But going back to that, those smart meters, again, I'm speaking from the standpoint of, I don't know the situation in New Zealand, but in our area and other parts of the country, there is an issue with the electromagnetic fields and the radio frequency radiation that comes from these smart meters because they're being pinged every 6 seconds. And people have complained of severe and persistent headaches, nausea, vomiting, insomnia, burning on their skin, agitation, irritability.
I've heard of similar things myself.
Difficulty in concentrating, high-pitched ringing in their ears, depression, lethargy, forgetfulness, heart palpitations, buzzing and humming sounds, constant fatigue. And that also comes from that thump, 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 that the big
windmills,
wind turbines do. And women have aborted their babies, pregnant women, and animals have aborted their babies in the vicinity of these devices. So they're not as healthy as you think they are, Don.
No. Well, I am not going to debate that at all. We were sold the concept on the efficiency of their recording systems. And on top of that, there was a few people debating those very health issues you talk about. And I gather there are some people who don't have smart meters in our region. But in the end, you know, time will certainly show whether there is deleterious effects. But a key thing for me in all of this, Ileana, regardless of who's right and wrong on that aspect, it is about surveillance. It is all about control. It is all about managing every individual to the
micromanaging.
And I can't take it.
They are surveilling your home right now with smart meters. You may have nothing else electronic in your home, but with smart meters, they are surveilling what you do. They know exactly what you do with what appliances you have, and they sell it to a third party.
I worry for my children, the next generation that's coming in. We've had now you look back at this, the Agenda 2030, 50, 70, 100 years in the making, and we've had at least two generations that have sleepwalked through this, just going on, oh, it's just one more form to sign, or just one more line, one more bit to tick off, one more box to check off. But the point is, when will we say this is all too much? This is just all too much. And that's where this is heading to, because, you know, I don't know about you, but try building a healthcare system in Cuba. You need economic prosperity. You need capitalism to be able to build something worthwhile.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just don't know. I'm totally against Agenda 21. I think it's communist globalist control of every aspect of our lives and every aspect of business. And what bothers me, going back to these smart meters, is that the utility company, it's convenient for them because they don't have to store excess capacity of electricity if they should need it, let's say in a day when it's really cold and people use a lot of electricity, or in a day when it's really hot and they use their air conditioning perhaps. So by having these smart meters, they can remotely shut off your electricity, and that way they meet their goals. They don't have to store this extra energy anywhere else. They just cut you off. And a lot of people have died, particularly in the United States, because they have to store medicines in the refrigerators. They have requirements for certain temperature. Yeah. They have oxygen machines, you know, to stay alive, whatever. And that's just not fair. That's a form of control, and you're murdering people, in my opinion.
Well, yep. Yeah, and look, there's a different concept in America than the States. I accept that. New Zealand does have massive batteries called lakes, and that's we're pretty much 70-80% hydropower. So that's our storage system. And what gets me in especially the Western states, where I read on the Klamath River, I think it is, they're taking down hydro schemes. I can't believe they're destroying dams.
I know, they're blowing up dams. Exactly. Mm. It's just unbelievable.
So, you know, you wrote a blog recently. In fact, the day we're recording this, it came out, and it's called Communism Explained for Useful Idiots. And the key bit at the end of it for me, and there's a lot of good stuff in it, communism since the publication of the Communist Manifesto pamphlet in 1848 has not, number one, held free elections, had independent search for truth, had freedom of press, had freedom of speech, had freedom of religion, had an independent judicial system, judges were always controlled by the state, had a legacy of love, just hatred, had freedom, just coercion, and the use of force, violence, and death. And you conclude by saying the fanaticism of communism is so deeply rooted that they are still faithful to the original Soviet communism and atheism to this day. Once a communist, always a communist. And, you know, that's not a salutary warning to all of the listeners, you know, to what's, you know, quite, it's around us. We feel it. But plenty of people don't acknowledge it, Eliana. And I just thank you for writing your output like this and your blogs and your multiple books, because without it, the world would be a far worse place. I mean, we need people like you, and we're just so grateful to have you on Reality Check Radio Greenwashed. We think you're gold for us. So thank you for coming back on with us. And
thank you, Don.
We hope to have you back again because we love your forthright nature.
Oh, well, thank you. And I hope to come back. And thank you, Jaspreet, too. I enjoy these conversations very much.
The pleasure is all ours, Eliana. Listeners, you're listening to Dr. Eliana Johnson from Northern Virginia. She's been here for the second time, and we were talking all things Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, whatever terminology you may use. Thank you so much. And please text that to 2057 for any feedback for us or Eliana. Eliana, we will see you again another time, sometime this year, especially with the American elections on.
Thank you. Until next time.
Until next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.